Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. It's episode 269. This is 9 May. Let me see how many stories we have. 1, 2, 3, I think 5, maybe 4. They're kind of long. So maybe 25 minutes, 30. We'll see. Anyway, we'll get caught up on what's going on in Israel. We'll start off with defense news. This is defense news by way of Associated Press. Or is it Associated Press by way of Defense News? I think that's it. The authors are Zeke Miller, AP, and Imer Madani, AP. The title is Biden Says U.S. Won't Supply Weapons for Israel to Attack Rafah. We briefly went over this last episode, but we have a little bit more detail today. This is from 8 May, yesterday. President Joe Biden said yesterday, that he would not supply offensive weapons to Israel that they could use during an all-out assault on Rafah. President Biden said in an interview with CNN that the United States was still committed to Israel's defense and would supply Iron Dome rocket interceptors and other defensive arms, but that if Israel goes into Rafah, quote, we're not going to supply the weapons and artillery shells used. President Biden's comments in a decision last week to pause a shipment of heavy bombs to Israel are the most striking manifestations of his growing daylight between his administration and Israel. Well, actually, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government, not Israel. Make sure I correct that. About this shipment, the shipment was supposed to consist of 1,800 2,000-pound bombs or 900-kilogram bombs, and 1,700 500-pound bombs, or 225-kilogram bombs. That's according to U.S. administration official who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the sensitive matter, unnamed. The focus of U.S. concern was at the larger explosives and how they could be used in a dense urban area. Here's some more quotes from the president. Civilians have been killed in Gaza as a consequence of those bombs and other ways in which they go after population centers, President Biden told CNN. Another quote, I made it clear that if they go into Rafah, they haven't gone into Rafah yet. And if they go into Rafah, I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah, to deal with the cities that deal with that problem. And end of that quote. Another quote is, we're not walking away from Israel's security. Biden continued, we're walking away from Israel's ability to wage war in those areas. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said Wednesday he confirmed the weapons delay, telling the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense that the United States had paused, quote, one shipment of high payload munitions. Another quote from the secretary, we're going to do what's necessary to ensure that Israel has the means to defend itself. But that said, we are currently reviewing some near-term security assistance shipments in the context of unfolding events in Rafah. President Biden signed off on this pause in an order conveyed last week to the Pentagon, according to U.S. officials who were not authorized to comment on the matter. The White House National Security Council sought to keep the decision out of the public eye for several days until it had a better understanding of the scope of Israel's intensified military operations in Rafah and until President Biden could deliver a long-planned speech on Tuesday to mark Holocaust Remembrance Day. Almost done here. The Biden administration in April began reviewing future transfers of military assistance as Netanyahu's government appeared to move closer to an invasion of Rafah, despite months of opposition from the White House. U.S. officials declined to comment for days on the halted transfer, word of which came as President Biden on Tuesday described U.S. support for Israel as ironclad, even when we disagree. Israel's ambassador to the United Nations, Gilad Erdan, said in an interview with TV12 News, the decision to pause a shipment was very disappointing and even frustrating. Israel troops on Tuesday seized control of Gaza's vital Rafah border crossing, what the White House described as, quote, a limited operation that stopped short of a full invasion of the city that Biden had repeatedly warned against, most recently in a Monday call with Prime Minister Netanyahu. That's it. Now let's see what Israel thinks about all this. Cup of water. This is from Emmanuel Fabian, Times of Israel. Today, IDF, we've got enough munitions for Rafah. Prime Minister, we'll fight with our fingertips. I'm sorry, with our fingernails if needed. The Israel defense, the IDF asserted on Thursday, today, that the military had enough munitions for planned missions after U.S. President Joe Biden threatened some arms shipments would be frozen if Israel launched a planned offensive in Rafah. Here's a quote from the IDF spokesman, Rear Admiral Hargari. He said, the IDF has armaments for missions it is planning, including missions in Rafah. We have what we need. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Netanyahu said in his first direct response Thursday to Biden's warning that if Israel has to stand alone, we will stand alone. Here's another quote. During the War of Independence 76 years ago, we were few against many. We had no weapons. There was an arms embargo on Israel. But with the strength of soul, the bravery, and the unity within us, we won. Today, we are much stronger. We are determined. We are united to defeat our enemy and those who seek to destroy us. If we need to, we will fight with our fingernails. But we have more than fingernails. The IDF operation Rafah has so far been limited to the eastern outskirts of the city and the border crossing with Egypt. Let's see, another quote from Hargari. Yes. Another quote from Hargari, the IDF spokesman. He says the United States has provided security assistance to the State of Israel and the IDF in an unprecedented manner during the war. Highlighting the coordination between the militaries, Hargari said that the IDF Chief of Staff, Lieutenant General Halavi, speaks regularly with U.S. CENTCOM Chief General Michael Carrilla. Another quote from him, Hargari, even when there are disagreements between us, we resolve them behind closed doors. Israel has security interests, but we are also aware of the interests of the United States, and this is how we will continue to act. I guess there's been some criticism about the decision in Israel, and pushing back against that criticism, War Cabinet Minister Benny Gantz criticized attacks on the United States by government ministers. Here's a quote from him. The United States stood by Israel in its most difficult hour, and the attacks on it by irresponsible ministers are ingratitude intended for domestic purposes and stemming from political considerations. Gantz did not mention anyone by name. Also continuing, Gantz says he believes vital arms shipments will continue. Israel has a moral and security obligation to continue fighting to return our hostages and remove the threat of Hamas from the country's south. And the United States has a moral strategic obligation to provide Israel with the tools required for that mission. Now we're getting to some hostage stuff. Same article, drinking some water. Kind of a long article here, but I'm about halfway done. Now we're getting some hostage stuff. Let's see. Amid the promises to continue the offensive in Rafah, both Israeli and Hamas delegations left indirect hostage truce talks in Cairo earlier Thursday, according to media reports. Before departing, Israel's negotiators put in writing their specific objections to a document issued by Hamas on Monday night that purportedly accepted a deal. We get kind of some details of the quote-unquote deal. Channel 12 said that the CIA director, Bill Burns, has departed the region, is headed back to the United States. I don't know what that means. Wherever Bill Burns goes, something's happening. According to an Egyptian source, efforts by Egyptian, Qatari, and U.S. mediators are ongoing to bring the two sides' points closer together. However, Channel 12 reported that the current round of talks at least was over. Maybe that's why Bill Burns left. It is said that in their talk with Bill Burns on Wednesday, Israeli leaders criticized the CIA chief for continuing Cairo talks in the wake of what they have called Hamas's unacceptable terms, saying that his presence risked creating the incorrect impression that Hamas document would serve as a basis for progress. Maybe that's why he left. Here's the terms that Hamas was talking about. This is like, I guess, the differences between the Israeli position and the Hamas position in this next couple of paragraphs. The terms that Hamas said on Monday it did accept differ in numerous key aspects from the proposal that Israel approved and that U.S. had previously described as extremely generous. With officials in the terror group claiming the deal would yield an end to the war, which we know Israel has not agreed to. Israel has repeatedly said it will not accept a deal that involves ending the war and that it fully intends to resume its campaign to destroy Hamas once any deal is carried out. Among the differences, and here they are, the Hamas proposal would see the release of 33 Israeli hostages, alive or dead, whereas the Israeli text requires the release of 33 living hostages. So that's the first problem. The next one is Hamas proposal removes the veto Israel demanded on the release of certain Palestinian security prisoners and also raises the number of security prisoners to be freed. So that's number two. Number three, Hamas proposal provides for the free movement of Gazans back and forth in the strip, back north of the strip without security checks as required by Israel to prevent Hamas gunmen from returning north. So that's, I guess, number three. There's another one here. The Hamas proposal also changes the timing of hostage release within phases and some specifics on Israeli troop withdrawals. Number four, and then also demands the release of all Palestinian security prisoners freed in the 2011 Gilad Shalit prisoner deal that have soon been rearrested. And that's like number five. And here's a big one, I guess. Significantly, Hamas said on Monday night that it regards itself as having accepted terms for an end to the war, whereas both Israeli-backed texts and Hamas response referring to restoring, quote, sustainable calm. In an introductory paragraph, Hamas text says the framework agreement aims for a return to sustainable calm that in a way achieves a permanent ceasefire, which we know, we said it before, Israel's not down for that. And that's it. Long article, but good article. 12 minutes. Next, we'll do some two stories from Ukraine, or about Ukraine. Let me drink some water. Okay, this is a super long article by Tim Martin, Breaking the Fence, great writer. I think the term epic means long. Is that an adjective? Epic? Long? It's a long article. He goes over the capability coalitions. Remember, there's eight of them. He goes over them kind of in depth. I'm not going to do all eight. I'll do four, and I'll do a four another episode. So this is from Breaking the Fence, Tim Martin. Read the article yourself. It's really good. Eight capability coalitions are rushing arms to Ukraine. Here's who will donate what. In parentheses, he has the word explainer. NATO has established eight different capability coalitions designed to get critical systems or ammunition into Ukraine quickly. Here's a deep dive into how they're faring. It is a pretty good deep dive. We've talked about these capability coalitions from time to time. But this is the first article I've seen where somebody kind of, what's the term? Aggregate? Is that a word? Put it all together. So Tim Martin, 9 May, the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, which is a collection of 50 nations offering military assistance to Ukraine, has been working to ease supply issues through a collection of eight capability coalitions. This was all established in February. The capability coalitions work to help Ukraine's equipment requirements. They are typically led by two or three nations at a time. The coalitions each offer Ukraine additional supplies of highly capable equipment, including fighter jets, drones, air defense systems, artillery, ammunition, tanks, blah, blah, blah. And here are the eight capability coalitions. Number one, Air Force, which is Denmark, Netherlands, United States. Number two is Armor, Germany and Poland. Number three is Artillery, France and the United States. Number four is Demining, Iceland and Lithuania. Number five is drones, Latvia and UK. Number six, integrated air and missile defense, France and Germany. Number seven, information technology, Estonia and Luxembourg. And number eight, maritime security, Norway and UK. UK's got two of them. United States has two of them also, artillery and air force. So I'll do the first four, in this episode, which are Air Force, Armor, Artillery, and Demining. And I'll do the other four probably next episode. So here we go. Air Force, the countries are Denmark, Netherlands, and the United States. The aim of this is to train Ukraine pilots, maintainers, and support crew on F-16 fourth generation fighter jets and to boost supply of fighter jets to Kiev. The Western jets will offer a boost to Ukraine's estimated pre-war inventory of 120 aircraft, which are mainly Soviet-era MiG-29s and Su-27s. We are aiming to provide an IOC, initial operation capability, for Ukraine for F-16 program in 2024, which entails trained pilots, but also maintainers and sustainers, spare parts and ammunition. Analysts suggest this operation, once operational, Ukraine will use the F-16s to intercept cruise and other surface-to-air missiles or potentially deploy them as air support for ground operations. There are other named partners. A total of 16 countries are involved in this program, other than the three I just named. Belgium, Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands all have committed to supplying aircraft to Ukraine. Denmark, Romania, the UK, and the United States host pilot training. So far, the United States has declined to provide its own F-16s. Here are the training centers. Morris National Guard, Air National Guard base in Arizona. There's a base in Romania, the 86th Air Base in Borsia, Romania. Skydrup Air Base in southern Denmark and an undisclosed location in the UK. European countries have so far pledged 45 jets for the delivery to Ukraine. Denmark will, with a first from Denmark, to be handed over in the summer. Additionally, the Netherlands has so far delivered 11 planes to the European F-16 training center in Romania. A total of 12 pilots are set to be trained by the United States in FY24. A group of 10 Ukrainian pilots also completed flying training in the UK with the Royal Air Force last month. So next, Armor, Germany and Poland. Purpose is to supply main battle tanks to Kiev as part of a joint effort launched in February of 2023. Berlin agreed to deliver Leopard 2 A6 vehicles, with Poland committing to provide Leopard 2 A4s. Other partners in this are Italy, Sweden, and the UK. Officials have not shared how the Armor Coalition has progressed. At a more general level, Leopard 2 tanks have suffered a relatively low loss rate during the conflict with Russia, suggesting it is highly survivable. Since German deliveries to Ukraine started in March of 2023, Russia has destroyed a total of 15 of these, according to open source intelligence. The United States is also supplying Abrams, but recent news reports that it has not fared as well. I think they've destroyed five, the Russians, five of 31, I think. Ukraine has started to pull them back from the front lines as they've proven too easy to be spotted by drones. I think we did a story on that. Number three, artillery, France and the United States. Purpose to boost Ukraine's immediate ammunition needs and supply 78 Caesar 155mm howitzers, which are partly financed by other nations. Ukraine ordered six of these prior to the launch of the coalition. France has committed 50 million euro to buy 12 of the other 72, which are remaining, and wants the other 60 to be funded by other allies or the European Defense Agency. So they want 78 of these 155s. Ukraine's already got six. France has given them 12. And then the remaining 60 will come from someone else. Ukraine has long suffered an ammunition shortage owing to the United States and European manufacturers unable to keep up with demand. It remains unable to match Russia's output rate, estimated at 10,000 rounds per day. There also appears to be little near-term prospect of the West breaking Russia's ammunition production superiority. The Royal United Services Institute, a British military think tank, estimates Russian overall artillery production is to plateau at 3 million rounds a year. I'm going to say that again, 3 million rounds a year. According to a senior European intelligence official, combined efforts of both the United States and Europe can produce 1.2 million munitions annually. Not even half. Who else is in all this? There's 21 nations, including Canada, Germany, Poland, and the UK in this coalition. And kind of the status, France expects to deliver all 78 Caesars by the end of 2024, which is not too far away. France also told Breaking Defense that in April, the deliveries of shells are taking place as planned, suggesting that the coalition goal of 3,155 per month is on track. So if you give them 3,000 a month times 12, you do the math. Remember the Czech effort where they're going to give them 1 million rounds or something like that? How's that going? So far, 500,000 of these 1.5 million rounds the Czechs said they could provide have been secured. Deliveries will be expected between July and August. First deliveries, I should say. That's it. One more and we'll be done. 20 minutes, we'll be done half hour. So demining is the last one we'll do. Iceland and Lithuania. Purpose is to equip Ukrainian troops, including with remote detonation systems, and train 2,800 troops by the end of the year. Russia has developed a 600-mile front filled with densely packed minefields and anti-tank weapons. Analysts stress that Russia has deployed a vast collection of anti-personnel and anti-vehicular mines with a network of minefields that cover across 11 regions in Ukraine. They're all, I can't tell you where they are, Luhansk, Odessa, Sumska, Donetsk. There's a few more, obviously. How many partner nations? There's 22 nations with a few more considered joining. They had a coordination meeting in Vilnius, Lithuania in April to discuss current and future support from demining supplier countries. Plans for 2025 training and equipment commitments are also underway. Lithuania has invested 17 million euro to fund the coalition. A lot of money. And that's it. Now we'll go to Estonia for another short article. And then finally, we'll end with a domestic story on HIMARS. This is from Lee Farron, Breaking Defense, today. Estonia had discussed sending non-frontline troops to Ukraine. This is kind of the continuation story of how France has been dropping hints that it was going to send troops. I guess Estonia has been talking about it. So Estonia's military months ago had internal discussions about the potential for sending troops into Western Ukraine, far from the front lines, to take over some non-combat missions in order to free up Ukrainian troops to go to the front. This came from the Baltic nation's chief of defense. He told Breaking Defense this. His name is General Martin Harum. He said on Wednesday that there hasn't been serious discussion of the move since the idea of foreign troops in Ukraine has become polarized in public between, quote, doing nothing and fighting. General Harum noted there are several other ways troops could help without putting themselves in frontline combat, including medical or logistics missions, or perhaps even aiding in air defense for Western cities. General Harum's comments came after the Prime Minister of Lithuania, Ingrida Simone, told Financial Times she was open to sending Lithuanian troops into Ukraine to train Kiev's forces there. The Financial Times wrote that the Prime Minister predicted Russia could see the move as escalation, but she added, if we just thought about the Russian response, then we could not do anything, send anything. Every second week you hear that somebody will be nuked. The Prime Minister said that Ukraine had not requested troops. A key Estonian lawmaker, Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Marko Mikkelson, also called out Russian, quote, nuclear blackmail and pushed further on the foreign troops question, saying that European nations have to start thinking about a coalition of the willing to more directly help Kiev, potentially with direct combat. Mikkelson said in discussion for the Kaplan Public Service Foundation Wednesday that the effort could start with air defense. He cited the Allied response to Iran's drone and missile barrage against Israel, in which the United States, the UK, and France helped down incoming threats. Would Estonia be part of the coalition of the willing? Yes, I hope so. Mikkelson said, we know our duty. The United States Ambassador to Estonia, George Kent, likewise pointed Breaking Defense to the Biden administration policy of aiding Ukraine through significant aid packages, but a firm commitment of not sending in American soldiers. Here's a quote from him, the ambassador. He said, you will not see American troops fighting in Ukraine. For months, the United States has had trained Ukrainian service members in Europe, outside Ukraine, and in the United States. That's it. Short article. Last article is very short also. Lockheed Martin clinches $861 million HIMARS contract from the Army. This is today, Breaking Defense, Joe Sabala. Short article, Lockheed Martin has been awarded a contract to supply HIMARS to the U.S. Army. The agreement has a value of $863 million. Covers spare parts, associated service, support services, including logistics, maintenance, and training. The contract does not disclose how many HIMARS are being ordered, but previous solicitation documents show that the Army wants 288 launchers. Work for the contract will conclude by May of 2026, not too far away, 2 years. One of the most powerful weapons in the U.S. Army, the Lockheed Martin's HIMARS is designed to protect high-value assets from a wide variety of threats. I don't know if it's designed to protect. It's designed to blow some things up. It's mounted on a wheeled vehicle. The rocket system can be operated by a crew of three, driver, gunner, and section chief. It can fire all the MLRS family of munitions. And this $1 billion contract, nearly $1 billion contract, is a part of the U.S. Army efforts to replenish its HIMARS stocks sent to Ukraine. As of January, Washington has donated a total of 39 HIMARS to Ukraine, according to a report by Forbes. And that's it. Last story. So we'll get to the other four capability coalitions next episode and do some other stuff. So that's it. Episode 269 of the books. Thank you very much for listening. Good night.